Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Good afternoon, Anton. How are you on this bank holiday weekend?
Frightened, Dave. The world is going to end at the hands of crayfish. Or the claws, as the case may
the
be.
The world is going to end at the hand of crayfish. At the what of crayfish? The hand?
The claws of crayfish.
Do crayfish have hands? Okay, let's go for it. Sorry, what are you talking about?
Well, there's actually a very interesting crayfish, but it's taking over large chunks of the planet, which is problematic.
As opposed to the boring ones.
Well, yeah, most crayfish are what you would expect. A mummy crayfish and a daddy crayfish gets together and they create other little crayfish. And this has been going on for many, 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 many years. This crayfish, which is the marbled crayfish, is particularly fascinating because nobody knows where it came from. They think it was genetically experimented crayfish that resulted in the existence of this one. And this one can breed parthogenetically, which means the lady crayfish can just have other lady crayfish with no guys involved. And as if that wasn't bad enough, they therefore spread with such rapidity that they are taking over most of Europe. Most recently, it has been discovered that they have taken over a cemetery, the Schoonselhof Cemetery in Antwerp, which is the pride of Antwerpian cemeteries, and it's now stuffed with mutant female cloning themselves crayfish.
Right, this is not some kind of a... You've got 60 seconds to pitch something to a producer in Hollywood and it's
No, it is... I'm telling you, when in 40 years, when the world is ending because we're all inundated with crayfish, we'll look back at this and not laugh. They think it was pet shop owners in Germany experimenting with breeding crayfish that created this one that can just clone itself. And it literally just has babies all the time. And it's actually a very interesting thing for biologists to look at because every child is identical to the mother. So it's just a direct clone. The mother just keeps copying herself. But what's amazing is they vary from being sort of 10 inches long to being 2 inches long. They vary in attitude, in timidity, in aggression, even though they are all genetically the exact same. And they've run controls on them where they've put them in aquariums and studied them to make sure that they all have exactly the same stimulus. And they still get huge variety in all of these identical cloned crayfish who are taking over.
That is, I'm speechless. That's very...
It's amazing, isn't it? And the other thing is they eat everything. So once they get into a lake, they just completely destroy it and take it over. They're a real honest to God plague.
Wow. And this real honest to God plague has taken over, did you say, a cemetery or something? Is that what you said?
Not just any cemetery, Dave.
Oh, sure.
The Schoonselhof Cemetery in Antwerp.
Sorry, the Schoonselhof, of course.
Come on, it is known as the Flemish city's Père Lachaise.
Oh, is there a Jim Morrison crayfish? Wow. That is pretty amazing, all right. That's astonishing. So what's going to happen? Are we going to be, overtaken?
Perhaps? Correct. And masks will do nothing against a school of angry female clone crayfish.
Wow, that's pretty weird.
Because they're very aggressive. That's the other thing. They are nasty and mean. So they don't sit in little holes and think, I'm going to filter feed anything that's going by. They come for you.
What are the Dr. Fauci's saying? Can we get rid of them? Like, I mean, can it happen? Can we eradicate at some stage?
They're almost impossible to eradicate because they replicate so fast, they hide so well, and they can travel over both in water and over land.
Wow.
So during the night, they crawl out of their little lakes and crawl across the ground to find another lake into which they go and then just lay waste all around.
Decimate the lake. I see. Okay, well, that's a terrible story. Have you anything else that's nicer?
In other news,
yeah.
Parents have named their daughter after an internet provider in Holland to get free Wi-Fi.
And what did they call the daughter?
Twyfia.
Twyfia. And
Twyfia.
Did the Wi-Fi provider say if you call your daughter Twyfia? Oh, there's a W-I-F-I in that, isn't there? Oh, right, okay.
There is.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Wiffy, as we call it. there was a deliberate mistake when I said Dutch. Swiss. It's Twyfy, which is a Swiss-based internet provider. And they did a deal where they said, you can have free internet for 18 years if you name your child after us. The female version being Twyfia and the male version being Twyfus.
All right, so it's just this is a promotional thing, is it?
True, but this woman is now, this is on her birth cert. The mother said, the longer I thought about it, the more unique the name became for me. And that was where the thing got its charm. So she's now named Twyfia for the rest of her life and there's 18 years of free Wi-Fi.
Right, and it, on her birth cert, does it give it the full whack? Like, is she wireless fidelity or is it just...
Don't we have the Australians to thank for that?
What?
The mayor in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yeah, I know. Wait a minute. Tallulah Bankhead. No, not Tallulah Bankhead. No. Wait a second.
God, this is awful.
No, it's Hedy.
Hedy Lamarr. Yes. Whew.
It's Hedy. Oh. It's Hedy. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but didn't Hedy Lamarr have something to do with the mathematics on which Wi-Fi is based?
She absolutely did. We had that on the programme sometime too. Yeah, she was she was an innovator and all the rest of it and whatever you call it, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if they'd had any respect, they would have named the child Hedy. Anyway, the child is now named Twiffia, and on the birth cert, if it helps, it's only the child's middle name as opposed to her first name. But she is nonetheless, for the rest of her life, unless she gets a deed poll, she's Twiffia.
Right, but she can't necessarily use radio frequencies to send signals between devices, can she?
No, I don't believe so, nor gang in Bluetooth for extra bandwidth, Dave. Iceland, the frozen food people, yes, have sent a chicken nugget into space.
And how far did the nugget get?
20.7 miles.
20.7 miles. That sounds like a lot, is it?
It is. It's 110,000 feet. It's just at the outer edges, just beyond the outer edges of what an air-breathing engine can get an aircraft to in a zoom climb.
And did it come back to Earth?
It did, under a parachute.
Wait a minute. They sent a chicken nugget up in a parachute.
No, they sent a chicken nugget down in a parachute. Wait, they sent it up in a helium balloon.
But it must have had a parachute on its back.
It did.
Right, okay.
And now, I don't know if a chicken nugget has a back. I think it's all front-facing. But it did. It was attached
and
to a parachute.
Were they monitoring where it was going? Like, did it hang around in kind of hyperspace for a half an hour or so and dance around the place?
Not hyperspace,
whatever
near
it's
space.
Near space,
it, yeah. It hung around in near space for quite some time. The flight of the nugget... and I should call it a nugget run. The flight of the nugget.
Sounds like a whatever. Go on.
It took off from Sheffield, which is a common space flight location, and it climbed at a rate of, I think, about 9 meters per second, tied to a helium balloon. What's interesting about the helium balloon is as it goes higher and higher and the atmospheric pressure decreases, it expands and expands and expands. So a balloon that at ground level is probably about the same size as an old-style TV. By the time it gets to near space, size of a double-decker bus.
And does it burst?
Yes, it does. Oh. It eventually gets to such a scale that it bursts, at which point the chicken nugget accelerates to 200 miles an hour in an uncontrolled descent.
Oh, right. So wait a second. So the minute the balloon isn't happening, he's descending all the time. He's not hanging around up there by himself.
No, he's not. He hasn't. He's not in a geosynchronous orbit, Dave.
Whoa.
He's just up at near space.
Right,
so when he begins to fall, He accelerates to a chicken nugget's terminal velocity, which is in the region of 200 miles per hour.
I'll have to believe you. Okay, go on.
Which is why he has to have a parachute.
And did they have a GoPro stuck to him or anything? Like
they do. They film his journey all the way up.
They
journey all the way down.
So they have him up there, and did they have him when the Big Bang happened and the balloon?
They do.
Went.
They have. They film the entire thing. This gets weirder, Dave.
Wait a second. Hold on. Wait a minute. You're telling me that no, like they couldn't put a parachute on his back. He didn't have a back, and it would be too big. And you're telling me now they had a GoPro on his front?
No. Yes, they did. They had a GoPro somewhere around him. But he was hanging suspended from another element of this spacecraft. Because it's true. You can go online and see the nugget. This actually happened. And then, this is the bit that I think is very clever, because you have to remember it's minus 68 degrees up there. And it's an Iceland chicken nugget, so one assumes it left the ground frozen in the first place. Now, you imagine the damage that a frozen chicken nugget could do traveling at 200 miles an hour as it re-entered the Sheffield area.
And where does it land?
Somewhere in Sheffield, but it had a parachute, you see, is the point.
Oh,
so the parachute opened and it floated softly to the ground.
Right.
What's interesting about this is it is not the first piece of...
Hold on, just one last thing on that. How did the parachute open? I mean,
quickly.
Who opened it? I mean, the chicken nugget say, right now, I'm out of that balloon here. I better pull this cord.
It checked its altimeter and at just the right moment, it jacked the ripcord. I assume they have, I know they have a general control system from the ground. I don't know if they fire the parachute from the ground or if it has some form of altimeter. I assume it has an air pressure altimeter and it automatically triggers.
Is that what parachute. You assume, is it?
That's what I would assume, yes. Because they've put other things in space before. For instance, they put a meat pie in space. And that was a lot bigger than a chicken nugget. You know, you couldn't take risks with a meat pie. What's interesting, and this relates back to our previous discussion about crayfish, is the company that does this does a good line in ash scattering around the planet.
Ash scattering.
Ash scattering. Say that three times quick.
Okay, that's nothing to do with the kind of volcano in Iceland kind of thing. This is ash scattering. So why am I supposed to know why ash scattering is a thing?
Well, let's say that you were, you know the way Hunter S. Thompson, you know the way he wanted his ashes shot into space from a cannon.
Johnny Depp paid $40 million to do it out of a cannon. Come on, Johnny.
You got to respect a man who builds a cannon for Hunter's ashes.
Absolutely.
Well, the same thing. Obviously, there are people who want their ashes to be scattered in space, and this company in Sheffield will do it for you.
I see where you're going.
So you
now
gather together with your mourners in an industrial estate in Sheffield.
And then,
you,
whew,
well, it's a helium balloon, so it's more...
Right. Oh, look. Oh, there it goes.
Yes. And you mourn. Now, it's a long mourn because it's an hour and a half for it to get up there. You've got a live feed of it happening. You can then see it open its casket and scatter all the way around the planet.
Fantastic.
And then it descends. The even weirder one, Dave.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah. Okay, so meat pie people, go on.
Correct. The weirdest one of all is they do a service. There's one, their premium service is they take the ashes up and scatter them around the earth. Their gold service is they take the ashes up and then bring them back down again.
You mean like you have a flight over the earth as your last flight and that's it kind of thing?
Yes. And the way they advertise it on the website is to achieve a lifelong dream of space flight. It's like, well, I'm not really achieving it if I'm dead and ashen. But if you've ever, if you someday, Dave, think at the passing of a loved one, the best way to send them off would be to have them be 20 miles above Sheffield for about 20 minutes tied to a balloon, we can make it happen.
And is that how far the human ashes go?
Like yes. Really? Wow. Again, 110,000 feet. Upper edges of air-breathing engines, Dave. Right. We need a little bit of atmosphere.
So we're talking what space? Not, that's not outer space.
Near space.
It's near space.
So near space. You see the curvature of the Earth? Right. It looks a bit like space, but there's just enough atmosphere to allow the helium to be still lighted in the air
that's
around it.
Amazing story.
In good news,
yeah,
Gerald, the inordinately aggressive turkey, has been moved.
Gerald, the inordinately, what turkey?
Aggressive.
Aggressive turkey. Okay, he's been moved, has he?
Yes.
Right, okay. From where to where?
Well, from Oakland's Morecambe Rose Garden to pastures in a farm somewhere. I don't mean that.
I wish I hadn't asked that. Okay, so just tell me about Gerald the aggressive turkey.
No, Gerald the inordinately aggressive turkey.
Inordinately aggressive turkey.
Now, you talk about band names. Tell me Gerald the inordinately aggressive turkey. It doesn't have band name written all over it.
Right, okay, all right.
And in at number three, with a bullet, it's Gerald the inordinately aggressive.
He'd be a dance DJ kind of person,
Well, Gerald was, as the name implies, an inordinately aggressive turkey, which was known for attacking people in this rose garden. Unfortunately, it was known for attacking what is probably the prime client of a rose garden, elderly ladies.
Right, okay.
I'm not being ageist. I think it is statistically accurate that you will find more clients of rose gardens in the elderly lady community, but Gerald hated them.
And like, where did Gerald, like, who called Gerald Gerald? Was it another, oh, wait a minute. It was a
Mr.
person.
And Mrs. Inordinately Aggressive Turkey, Dave.
Okay, fair enough. It's not a talking turkey, is it?
No, it's an attacking turkey. Right, okay. And what Gerald would do is Gerald would come up to little old ladies and do a sort of a cooing thing and flap some feathers. And they'd go, oh, hello, gobble, 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 gobble. And they'd go, gotcha, and lather the living daylights out of them. So to catch him, not making this up, this is an actual thing, a person from Oakland Animal Services by the name of Rebecca Dmitrick, who is a woman of around 50 years of age, disguised herself as an old lady so that Gerald would attack. When Gerald attacked, she grabbed him by the neck, restrained him, and he was moved to a safer place.
Wow, that's a great story, I think, is it? I mean, it's nice now that everybody's happy at the end, you know, and the farmer's wife made us sandwiches, and they were the nicest sandwiches we ever had, kind of end of a chapter, is that it?
Well, then I'll stay on the theme. Right. Would you like a swan?
A swan, yeah, tell me about the swans.
There's free swans going in Lakeland, Florida.
Right, okay. What
thanks
that
to Queen Elizabeth.
Free swans, you can take them home, like?
Correct. Right. You can have a free swan from Lakeland in Florida, thanks to Queen Elizabeth. Probably the first time that sentence has ever been said.
I bet you she sent 200 years ago or something, and then look what happened now. Is that it?
Bang on.
Right.
Swans have lived in Lakeland, Florida since 1923. But by 1953, all of them had been eaten by gators or alligator snapping turtles or any of the other myriad of things that want to eat you if you're a swan in Florida. So in the mid-50s, a Floridian woman living in England wrote to the Queen to say, any chance we could have a couple of swans, because I'd like to bring them back to Lakeland and let them get busy so we can have a lot more swans. Why did she have to write to the Queen?
Because she owned them.
But why? Why did she own swans, God. Dave, is the point.
Why not? She had lakes that had to be filled with things. It's like, would you ever read The Wild Swans at Cool? There's stories about these things.
The Queen owns all unregistered swans in the UK.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah, you have to register your swan.
I was just going to say, are swans registered?
Yeah. Right, okay. In the late 1400s, they brought in a law that people who owned swans would mark their beaks, like tagging the ear of a cow, and you had your own swan mark that would be etched on your swan.
I didn't know that.
Good. And any unmarked swan, by default, became the possession of Her Majesty. And until the Victorian era, the swan was a big Christmas meal. You used to have a big roast swan for Christmas. Wow. Apparently they taste lovely.
Really? I was just going to say, do people eat swans? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it went out of fashion in the Victorian era. But pre then, the swan was a big thing. In fact, one of the most common ways to serve roast swan was you would skin it and leave the feathers on the skin. Then you'd roast it and then you'd wrap it in its own skin and feathers, which is a bit saw, but that's how they would serve it. So you'd get what looks to be a live swan. You lift off its little its own skin suit and there it is underneath.
And very tasty, you say, as well.
So they say. So this woman wrote to the Queen, said, any chance of two swans? She said, you can have them if you pay for them to be collected. So she paid for them to be collected. They got shagged off to Lakeland in Florida, where they went at it like badgers. And the end result is Lakeland, Florida now has more swans than they can shake a stick at. So if you want one, it's yours for $400. As long as you can prove that you live near fresh water, that the swan will be able to perambulate around and perturbate upon.
Fantastic. Great story. Lovely.
Did you hear about Jean-Claude Van Damme? He's a martial artist, Dave. Do you know any martial artists? He saved the life of a chihuahua who had a fake passport.
Okay, this is a Chuck Norris reference, first of all. Secondly, Jean-Claude Van Damme saved the life of a chihuahua who what?
Had a fake passport.
Okay, no, go on. Tell me about the chihuahua with the fake passport. He likes dogs, doesn't he?
He does. He saved a three-month-old chihuahua from euthanasia following a legal tussle between Norway and Bulgaria.
And what happened?
This chihuahua had been bought by somebody in Norway, but had been sent to Norway from Bulgaria on a fake Bulgarian passport. At that point, the Norwegian said, no, this chihuahua cannot stay in Norway because the documentation is not correct, and dispatched said chihuahua back to Bulgaria, at which point Bulgaria said, no, this chihuahua is stateless because you can't prove that it ever came from Bulgaria in the first place. And they both said, euthanasia. And Jean-Claude Van Damme said, mais non, gentlemen, we will save this chihuahua. And he brought so much attention to the chihuahua that the Bulgarians have decided to back down and the little dog has been accepted home.
Wait, passport?
Yes.
What passport?
A dog passport. You have dog passports. If you want to take your dog somewhere, you have a little pet passport and you go, this is my dog.
Monty Python sketch for whatever it was, the passport for you. My pet fish called Erica, whatever it is. A license, sorry.
Marcel Proust had a haddock, I believe, according to
Monty
Proust. Python.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Are you calling the author of All Aubrey Shirts to Tom Pear to a loony? I shall have to ask you to step outside. A license for your pet fish. Okay, wait a minute.
Let's do the parrot sketch.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, he was in a movie where he played himself. I mean, I'm sorry, there was two of them. There was himself, there was Jean-Claude, who was a nice guy in the movie, and there was his brother, who wasn't a nice guy. I think it might have been called Double Impact or something, but I don't know if it was. But the poster on the front of the DVD in those old days was Twice the Van Damage. Listen, goodbye. Anton.
It's the way you lead up to letting me go that I like so much.
I'll see you. Thanks very much, Anton.
See you, Dave.
Bye.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.